Executive Director of the Atlanta Press Club, and I want to thank all of you for coming out this evening. This is our first program in our series on new media. As you can see by our great crowd tonight, this is a topic that's become increasingly important to people in the journalism as well as the technology industries. Before we get started, I want to give a special thank you in the front row here, Quinn Hudson. He is with the Hudson Slayton Group, and I want to thank them for sponsoring us this evening. Sorry to catch you with food in your mouth. Hudson Slayton Group is a full-service corporate communications agency that frames issues for executives who want to make a difference. So if you want to learn more about his company, you can check him out at hudsonslayton.com or just come talk to him after the program. When you arrived this evening, you should have received an Atlanta Media Guidebook. It should be in your chair, and that's courtesy of Manning, Selvage, and Lee, so a special thank you to them for handing those out. I would now like to introduce our moderator for the evening. That's Grayson Daughters. Grayson has 16 years' experience working in the mainstream media as a producer with ABC News' Southeast Bureau, as well as Home Depot TV's department. Over the past few years, however, Grayson has left the comforts and confines of the mainstream media and taken a wild and often bumpy ride down the new media trail, although she surfaced a couple of times to write mainstream editorial or two along the way. Grayson indulges herself in all things internet by blogging every day, committing citizen journalism whenever possible, producing and writing broadband video, podcasting, and creating the comedy web show TrueGrits.com. In May of 2006, Grayson founded her new media production and consulting company called Way South Media. She's been a member of the Atlanta Press Club on and off since 1988, and we'd like to welcome Grayson Daughters.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. Welcome. I'm a behind-the-camera person completely, so I'm very comfortable speaking in crowds, so please bear with me. But I'll be moderating the program tonight, though, or trying to. And before we get started, let me introduce you to our panel. This is a great panel. This is going to be such a great evening. And first of all, we have Mark Bauer. Mark is the Emmy Award-winning web content manager of WSBTV.com. His 30 years of experience in journalism includes print, local TV news, network TV news, and now the internets. He uses the internet to follow the Braves, the North Carolina Tar Heels, and plans to see Jimmy Buffett in concert. On the internet or real?
Both.
Okay. Mark lives in Smyrna with his wife, Debbie, and their English Cocker Spaniel, Toby. Do you blog about Toby?
I have blogged about
Toby. Do you have
Toby.
A Toby blog?
Okay. We have pictures of Toby on the internet. So
that's the place for Toby. Yeah. Next is Leah Donowski with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I've long been familiar with Leah's work. Leah Donowski began her journalism career at her hometown paper, the Dallas Morning News, and went on to be an international, national, and Washington correspondent for Newsweek magazine and the Chicago Tribune. In 1990, she hung up her reporter's notebook and became award-winning editor for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. She moved to the digital world in 2005 to the newly created post of interactive editor at AJC.com. She's often interviewed on the topic of blogs and user-generated content and was a visiting faculty member at the Poynter Institute in the fall of 2006 for an online leadership seminar.
And I have a cat, okay? So if it's a dog, I want you to tell me the cat.
Good, we got a dog, we got a cat, all right, moving right along. Do you have a ferret, Lil?
Just a dog, but
oh,
lots of pictures of her on Flickr.
Just naked, anyway? Next, here is Lila King of CNN, and Lila is the senior producer for CNN.com. Her duties include leading the site's interactive storytelling and user participation efforts. Since coming to CNN.com in 2001, Lila has reported and produced several multimedia stories on a wide range of topics in international news, working to integrate new technologies into storytelling presentations. Lila produced many of the online interactive maps and audio slideshows that distinguished CNN's Peabody award-winning coverage of the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. And I just want to take a moment to say that CNN really led the pack of the nets and Hurricane Katrina coverage from my point of view. I blogged about it on several occasions. Anyway, Lila has recently launched iReport, CNN's highly successful citizen journalism initiative. That's kind of interesting. I hope we'll hear a lot more about that too tonight. On in, we have John Patton.
Two dogs.
He's a two dog kind of guy. Okay. On the end, we John is vice president. He kind of represents, I guess, our corporate side of all this, right? Or more of our
technology side.
Because remember, there is a technology side in all of this. So he's vice president of operations with the Port Network. He joined the Port Network in April of 2006, and he manages all aspects of operations and is an integral member of the senior team charged with strategic planning. Prior to the Port Network, John was a partner at GMG Capital Partners, and that was a technology-focused venture capital fund where he was responsible for sourcing deals, negotiating and closing transitions, and managing portfolio companies. John has a BS in electrical engineering from Rensselaer. That's very French.
Dutch.
Polytechnic.
Great hockey team.
Okay, and an MBA from Tech. Well, yeah, you're a Georgia Tech kind of guy. Okay. John is also on the board of directors for the Adaptive Learning Center for Infants and Children. So now let's begin the program. I want to start, first of all, since we've introduced our panel, and it's a great, really online-heavy panel, and I think that's really going to be their focus tonight. I want to see how many people here represent old media, or what they would say is old media. Can we have a show of hands? How many people here represent new media? How many people in old media are blogging? Oh, we have one here. Okay. And how many people are blogging that would say they're new media people? How many bloggers do we have here? How many podcasters do we have here? Great. Okay. So we've got some content people here as well. Let's start off with Mark. You're going to take it away here. You know, we had a bit of a discussion before. What is new media? Does anybody have a clue? Mark, you try to define new media for us.
You know, we were talking about that earlier, and when I got the call to do this, we talked about new media, mainstream media. And when I heard that phrase, mainstream media, I was like, good Lord, what is mainstream media anymore? A few years ago, you could say, well, that was the big newspapers and the TV stations. Now, I know that through our research and when I see our numbers, I know we lose people every day. And I know they're going someplace. But what is mainstream media today? I don't even, when people raise their hand, I work for old media, I don't even know what that is anymore. Mainstream media, is it just newspapers and TV? Is it, what were we talking about, Venus.com? Or,
does come from Planet Venus these days? Where does it come from?
You know, where are people getting their news? I know they're not getting it just from the newspapers and the TV stations anymore. I know they're not getting it just from our websites anymore. So I think when you talk about mainstream media, you got to open that door way up. I mean, that definition has spread tremendously in the last few years. And when you talk about new media, good Lord. I mean, I think you got to look about 10 minutes ago. I'm sure somebody started a website 10 minutes ago. So they're new media. You know, your blog from this morning, that's old news. You know, I mean, that isn't even new media anymore. So the first thing I think we could talk about here is, how do you define that? Who's new media? Who's old media? And when those two sides sit down, you know, people start butting heads, but I'm not even sure people know who they are anymore. Who's wearing the old media hat and who's wearing the new media hat? It's changes. You know, you look at YouTube, a YouTube page, and the front the front page changes while you're watching a video. You go back to the front page, it's new. It's changed completely. And we face that at SB.com constantly. I mean, we're constantly trying to churn the page, make it fresh, make it new, you know. And I fall in love with the story. I'm like, oh, this is so great. I love what's on the page right now. And then I'm like, good Lord, I got to get that off of there. I mean, it's been on there for 20 minutes. Let's move it.
Let me do this. I want to go through the panel and give them to. I want to have them talk about what in their head and from a personal standpoint, what do you think is new media? And then I want to kind of show a little quick video, and then I want to really open it up for Q&A, because I think this is a complete Q&A. It should be a real casual conversation that we have here tonight. So, Leah.
Well, I guess the thing that I would say is new media, it's a cycle of history in the same way that once upon a time, you know, radio is new media, TV was new media, newspapers were new media, the printing press. And now there's a new technology, the digital media. And, you know, a lot of it is merging. I mean, it's... You know, most news organizations, newspapers are now calling themselves news organizations because they operate on different platforms. They, you know, operate both as a print product, as a web product, as a messaging, you know, information way, you know, of disseminating information. And also the new technology allows that to be much more of a conversation. It allows... I saw a great... I actually Googled a bit before coming to this, and I came across a great phrase, which was asking, you know, on the issue of citizen journalism, which I know we're going to talk about. Yeah. Somebody defined that as people who were formerly known as the audience. Yeah. You know, because they have the ability to communicate, you know, with us, the main, quote, mainstream media, or, you know, whatever, you know, on an instantaneous basis, and then by posting on our site, they're communicating with others, and it becomes a cycle where they might be providing some information that we actually can use in another way, or directs a reporter to another story. So I guess it's, you know, to me, this is an evolutionary thing, rather than rather than a frightening thing, although anytime you have anything new, there will be aspects of it that affect something old that feels familiar and permutations that you didn't expect. But generally...
Leah brought up an interesting point that I don't think...
Oh, I'm so glad.
was involved with some of the earlier media you talked about, well, the Gutenberg Press, it's the interactive nature. Because when radio came along, there wasn't much interactiveness. Television came along, there wasn't much interactiveness. Newspapers, there was letters to the editor, which may come 3 or 4 days after something has happened. Now, the interactiveness can occur instantly.
Well, and now letters to the editor come in by email to the print thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The print product, yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course, you work for an organization that's just gone through a tremendous reorganization.
Really? My head's still spinning. Yeah. But.
So where did you end up?
I was what we knew was called a boxed person. In the organizational chart, I stayed in the same spot. But, yes, because in the organizational chart, there were boxes in
mine.
Did you bid for another box?
No, I opted to stay. But the interesting thing is I'm actually getting some people added to my area, which tells you sort of what the priorities and where the growth is. I mean, there are being people added to the interactivity area of AJC.com, of the digital world.
You know, Quinn, you were talking, you mentioned opening that gate, that floodgate. What we have found is anytime we open that door, in any process at all, whether it be forums, we link to blogs, We ask for the simplest thing, the hailstorm. Send us your hailstorm pictures. It is absolutely incredible. I mean, the minute we say we want your feedback, we want your interaction, we are absolutely flooded with submissions, with, I mean, the simplest thing, I was telling Dan Williams, we picked up the Wire story about the couple fighting over the Braves tickets, yes. The divorced couple. So we picked that up, and you know, we knew it would do well. So we put it on the front of the page, but we wanted to dress it up a little bit. So we put a little stupid, silly little survey. Who's your favorite Braves player? And I said, what are we going to get, like 100, 200 votes on that? In an hour, we had like 1,400 votes. I mean, it's anything that we open up and say, hey, we want to hear from you.
People are obviously really starved to participate in the news process.
Lala,
go ahead. You need to talk for a minute here.
Oh, okay, sure. Well, maybe I'll just pick up on that.
I think. Yeah.
Excuse me.
This is a new medium.
Right. It's a conversation.
Well, this illustrates the point perfectly, actually. I mean, so letters to the editor would publish 3 days later, you know, 4 days after they were sent in, and now they come via email or they come because someone's uploaded a picture, and it's people's interaction with the story. The interactivity isn't just after the fact. It becomes the story, right? So it happens so quickly that you move on to discussing what people have said about something. You know, that becomes your lead, and that becomes... The interactivity is more than just response. You know, what did you think about it? It's one example that comes to mind is the Disney announced its first Black princess, the Frog Princess movie, and that was, you know, we sifted a wire for CNN.com, and that was a hugely popular story, and thought, well, if this is really popular, it must resonate with people. People want something to say about it, so we've just. Out of the blue on a lark one afternoon built it, you know, it was, oh, Disney princesses, there's not much going on in the news today, let's make an iReport forum on Disney princesses. So fun Wednesday afternoon, right? So we made this forum and said, what do you think about the new Black princess, and send us, you know, a picture of your own little princess. And this got huge response, overwhelming. We were flooded with videos and photos of the most adorable little princesses you can imagine, right? And they're outfits with the hats, but Disney announcing the first Black princess really touched on something that people wanted to talk about. So it wasn't just really cute pictures of little princesses, which of course you want to put on the site because people want to look at that, but it was also little girls and their mothers talking about how important it was to them and what a big role princesses played in these, you know, 3 and 4 and 5 year old girls' lives and what they wanted to say about it. And that's a story too.
John, jump in here a second.
Okay. Well, first of all, I have to caveat the conversation a little bit. I'm probably the least relevant panelist in that I'm not a journalist and I don't blog. I'm not a journalist and I don't blog. I'm proud of that fact. I'm a recovering technologist and executive an enabler. We enable organizations to provide social media tools to our customers. So I think perhaps the conversation is not new media, old media. It's non-social media versus social media. And social media being exactly what you said, the desire for people to participate, number one, and the desire for the brand to have engagement with the people who are reading the stories or the content of the new media. And fundamentally, from my perspective, what Web 2.0 and what social media is all about is the new technology that has come to bear to fundamentally change the way media is created, distributed, and consumed. So that's...
Just a good segue let me just show this video. Some of you may, particularly the bloggers, have probably seen this. It's circulated on YouTube for a while. It's a strange, very bizarre little video. But I think it illustrates... At what a point we are where the technology has completely, it really is the technology, has completely inserted everything we know in terms of old media, whether, you know, is print even going to be around 5 years from now? And when you watch this video, it's a strange little video, but let me play it and see what you think.
Thank you.
read it if anybody can't hear it.
Let me
get back to the video.
Okay,
I'm that tech person.
John, I'm a recovering technologist. Sorry.
Let me just restart thing.
He's got my daughter.
Yes. Do we have a 12-year-old?
That's
a problem.
The 12-year-olds. That's what, you know, I think that video shows what a bizarre time we live in. And, you know, essentially everything is up for grabs and ownership. There is no ownership of media really anymore. And a lot of you probably read the book by Dan Gilmore, We the Media. And I really personally believe in that we are the media. So let's open this up for questions for our panel. What's on your mind?
There was a story last week, I remember, but it was about how the gathering of the story became the story. You know what I'm talking about? It was a story about, you're nodding your head, it was a story about how a reporter over at Wired Magazine was going to interview Michael Arrington, who's arguably the most famous tech blogger out there, right? Of TechCrunch. Mm-hmm. And in this reporter was going through the time-honored, you know, practice of sourcing, interviewing, and such. And so many of the sources clearly were folks from the blogosphere. And none of them wanted, well, many of them did not want to answer his questions, one in person or via phone. They wanted to either do it via email and or wanted him to post his questions on their blog. And then he would then respond to this reporter's questions through his blog. So comments from y'all reporters. What do you think this is doing to the relationship? Where do you think this is going? You know, just throwing it out there.
You want to take it?
Yeah. Well, it's all about the hits. I mean, it's all about page views.
I think we saw a close to home example here. Amani Channel was interviewed by the AJC the other day for his video blog, myurbanreport.com. He does a lot of video reports. And I just love this. You know, he's waiting there with his camera when the reporter arrives. You know, it's like, you know, you're the story, the reporter reporting on him is the story for his blog. He did this really clever little package featuring the reporter from the AJC. It's like, you know, who's the story now? What is the story? So that was a very similar example. And he immediately packaged up and put it on his blog.
Yeah, I think when we're talking about like old media, new media, traditional media versus new media, I mean, we're trying to put it within a box, but it's really all media. You know, whether or not, you know, it's from a blog. I mean, how often do we see news or information on a blog? Then it's on one of the mainstream sites. It happens all the time. How often do we see a story on the internet and then we see it on the 5 or 6 o'clock news, or, you know, in the newspaper a couple days later? I think what the internet has done, it gets the information there quicker to the audience. And it is definitely blurring the lines in terms of, okay, who's the source of the information. But, you know, like you said, we're all media. I mean, I come from a traditional background, news reporting. But, you know, I'm sort of experimenting in the blogosphere now just because it's sort of self-empowering. I mean, now the audience can participate. The audience can report. Oftentimes blogs get a bash for being like, oh, they're not credible because maybe the public doesn't exactly understand the news gathering process or the fact-checking process. But the fact remains that anybody now can write on any subject, and it's up to the audience to take that one step further and verify whether or not it's truthful, whether or not it's honest, fair, accurate, that sort of thing.
Let me engage the audience here a little bit and engage the audience. How many people read blogs here on a daily basis? on our panel, how many people read blogs?
I'm actually paid to.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like it's like that great old privilege.
Yes, no.
Well, a blogger isn't necessarily a journalist, though.
Well, I think that's a big question because you keep talking about media. Well, and I think there's a big difference between media and journalism.
Well, I think you.
Yeah. Blogger. I mean, you know,
but it's also self-correcting too. It's not just the audience. If a blogger gets something wrong,
well, I think you're going to the issue of what we're talking. Are we talking about new media? Are we talking about what is journalism in this new era? and
yeah,
does...
Let's bring it back around to citizen journalism, perhaps. Let's sort of corral the issue of citizen journalism. We haven't really talked about what does that mean to you at the AJC, for instance. What does citizen journalism mean to you at WSB? Or is there a place for the citizen journalists?
Well, you know, one of the things... I think I heard in your biography you were an editor, or you are an editor now?
Well, I've been an editor in print, and to some extent I still do some editing, or it's not necessarily copy line editing as much as it is almost sort of, you know, sort of strategic.
Right,
kind of
right.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the things we're talking about is who are the gatekeepers? You know, I mean, we're always... journalists, working journalists, and now we're going to get into all these definitions about, well, you know, what's mainstream media, who's a working journalist, but, you know, we're always answering to an editor. Good reporters are always working with their editor. When we're talking about fact-checking, we're talking about just plain old good writing, you know, we're talking about elements of style. And I think that's the big question. Who's the editor? I mean, does a website take a blogger's blog and just say, bam, there it is? I mean, with the wonderful aggregators these days, you can create whatever homepage you want. I mean, I've begun to believe that my homepage that I work hours to put together, it doesn't really even matter. I mean, I used to agonize as a producer, as a TV producer, agonize over stacking that show, making sure the stories flowed, that they made sense. You know, you didn't want to put the Britney Spears story next to the five dead in the hotel fire story. I mean, it didn't make sense. But you know what? Online, maybe that doesn't matter. Because people are picking and choosing.
They're going to go to the hotel bar, and they're going to go to Lindsay Lohan, right?
Right. I mean, so maybe I shouldn't even care about putting those stories together anymore because you're going to put them together any way you
exactly.
want.
Exactly. That's a good point there.
Let me go back for a second to the citizen journalism question, because I mean it is a good question. It's, you know, people say, how can you define it? Well, first of all, once again, I think the technology is what makes this new. If you think about it, to some extent, Thomas Paine was a citizen journalist. Abe Zapruder was a citizen journalist.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a matter of the fact that
for you younger folks, that was the guy that shot that.
What we have now is the ability of people, you know, to first of all send us content, to add to the content in a way that doesn't necessarily require. I mean, reporters will still call people, but they may get information that either is sent to them or is posted on, you know, a story level commenting or on a blog. Or there may be somebody completely outside of it, like, you know, the guy who, you know, was the complete typewriter expert who, you know, discovered that the memorandum used in the, you know, the CBS report couldn't have existed at that time, you know, whatever. And so then that becomes picked up. So, I mean, I guess I'm not as worried about this debate over who's a citizen journalist and who's not as much as what it means is that there are ways to use the technology to help add to the reporting and information.
Wait a minute, this woman really wants to ask a question. Go ahead.
Oh, it's somewhat related. Thomas Paine,
Abe
think is important or brought the democracy and keep it alive and well guarded, and that is, you know.
Lila, you want to take that one on? Because you deal with these people, you know what people like out there for their news, and you don't.
Sure, and one of the, well, it's a challenge, it's a great benefit, and it's also one of the terrible things about the web is that you build a home page, you select what your main story of the day is and your secondary stories, and you put them out, and then you know immediately what people are clicking on, right? And that is that's sort of dangerous territory, right? You know immediately everybody wants to read the Lindsay Lohan story. They don't care about the Iraq story or whatever that is, but that's the responsibility of editors, right? We have to balance that. It's amazing that we're able to see immediately what people are interested in. And, you know, it might be the Lindsay Lohan story, but it might also be a story about, about G8, right, great example, thank you, about G8 protests that people are clicking on and is a story that I think we could all agree on is something people should read about. It's
question over here.
I just had a question. Do you think, I view a lot of blogging and feedback, these kind of things, and people interacting about a story, I view it simply as entertainment a lot. People entertain themselves on the computer, they want to give their opinion because they think of something.
Their opinion is entertainment?
Well, I think they just want to comment on something. They want to be heard, like you said.
Sure.
They send you in those hail pictures, or they send you the princess pictures.
But that's entertainment?
It's not news.
It's changing the...
How's that not news?
What does it matter for democracy, if you ask yourself that?
Well, you know... How do you know when you gave them a print paper? I'm not saying that, Jane Hansen did very important reporting, and it is still those kinds of stories are important. Now, we don't know whether or not that was the most read thing in the print paper, but that doesn't necessarily mean it wasn't important that you don't continue to do it. We now have the ability to know the numbers, but that doesn't mean you quit doing those things. But, those people may have been skipping that important story and going to the crossword puzzle for all we know. But that doesn't mean, that we stop doing it. It just means we don't necessarily, we don't have the
control. Feedback say that you get is really newsworthy of the hundreds of bloggers that give their opinion because they think this and they think that. How much of that ends up later to be distilled into news?
It depends on your audience. If it's important to your audience, it's important.
But how do you know what your audience is?
So, in a generation or two, does this mean our audience is going to be driving the story? So we're not doing the stories about the Gonzalez going to the hotel, to the hospital room.
And people do it all.
But we've always had that. A newspaper, think about what's been in your newspaper. There have been what you would consider serious stories. There have been Dear Abby, and there have been the comics. That doesn't mean that the serious stories go away.
I mean, I just think that the generations that we're raising now, these people who are, this is all they care about, I just don't think that they're going to go beyond that.
Well, but the question is
who are these
how are you going to... did you force feed? I mean, you shoot them? I mean, what are you doing?
When it becomes important to their social network, they're going to read it and pay attention to it. Like this,
or they're going to participate in it.
Pool party. 300 Stockbridge High students were on Facebook. Believe me, that is a story is impacting their social network and their group. It's flying around, but it's niche. It's niche, but that's a story that was on the front page of everything here. Well, maybe not CNNI, but that's a very important story for our community, and our young people are certainly involved because it involved and impacted their social network. So if you can get to their social network, of course they're going to be involved.
Grace, and speaking of social networking, we think that's an integral element to the social media, not only the ability to participate back into the news that's being produced by the traditional media company, but also to give them back a little bit about who you are and why you care about what you're reading in their publication. And it allows the property, the traditional media property, to begin to segment their audience and, based upon who's reading what in each segment, provide kind of more engaged offerings to those people.
You know, you used the term earlier about self-correcting, and I'm encouraged. I it is a danger when we see, we get the immediate feedback, when we see our most popular stories, we see that list. But I'm encouraged by what I see, and that is that, yes, the Lindsay Lohan story, the Britney Spears story, that will shoot to the top. It will. But you know what? It's self-correcting. I mean, within a short period of time, it's almost gone. Like people are like, ooh, I need a shower. And that story will drop. I mean, yes, it will. It'll go to the top of the list very quickly. But it will self-correct, and it will start to drop, and it will find, water will find its level, you know, I mean, it, and then all of a sudden that G8 story will start to move up there. I'm encouraged. I think people... I was reading an analyst report
that actually described it as the confluence of a new term, communitainment, which would be community, communications, and entertainment. So it really it's fulfilling a lot of psychological needs of the people who are consuming the media.
Think about this.
What is it called?
Well, it's a word they made up. But any ability to interact with the people who are reading your publication is an excellent opportunity to learn more about what it is they want.
Think about this scenario. Say a high school here, Dunwoody High, Grady High, and they're all networked. These kids are all networked by technology. Boy, you put one thing out there, they know it in 5 minutes because of their technological devices. So say one of the kids went over to Europe and got caught up somehow in the G8 riots. Maybe they accidentally got sprayed by a water cannon and ended up in a jail in Germany. All of a sudden that story is back in Atlanta faster than any editor here in Atlanta will know about. There's a story that's important to them. They were suddenly caught up, maybe by accident, maybe their family was on vacation there. But all of a sudden, the GA is impacting Atlanta in a bizarre way we never thought of. And it didn't come, we would never thought of it until we found out about it through somebody's social network here. So, you know, you got to really keep an open eye. You know, you never can, you can't fail, your imagination cannot fail you at this point. I mean, there are infinite ways.
We were a perfect example of Virginia Tech, one of our interns. A young lady who spent part of the last summer with us was at Virginia Tech, and she was two blocks from the initial shooting, and she was IMing another friend who was in the first dormitory.
They had the story, in other words.
And they were IMing each other back and forth, and then she realized, oh my God, I'm in the middle of, you know...
Hell.
Yes. And then she started IMing me and then sending copies of the messages that
she didn't have a journalism degree either, I bet. there goes your journalism degree right out the window.
You know, so there's a perfect example of citizen journalism. I mean, she was right there, and I know you guys had that great piece of video shot by somebody with a cell phone.
The first responder was a cell phone.
Right. It was a graduate student who was outside Norris Hall. He saw police running into the building. He took out his cell phone. He crouched down on the ground. And he shot this really shaky video. But in the video, it's really hard to watch. But you can, you know, what you're seeing is police running in this, you know, sidewalk inside the buildings. But you're hearing gunshots, and it's really hard to listen to. But he, you know,
it begs the question we're posting IMs back and forth between, all right, how do I say this and not offend anybody, between two college girls, and it's stuff like, OMG, they're shooting. Is that journalism? I mean, for me to be putting that up?
That's it. It's an eyewitness report. Mm-hmm. Like putting a microphone into somebody and saying, what did you see? I mean, you're just doing it in a different way.
Right.
It's still the same way. It's not new media. I mean, it's a new technology. Same with the video. I mean, I really think it's like, you know, it's great you can get that video. But if you really boil it down to the basics of journalism, it's still just eyewitness.
But there are some other opportunities. I guess I would say.
Like,
No, no, I'm saying there are other opportunities to do journalism through the interactivity, through the technology, through the social networking. For instance, you know, we just had a whole series on the abuses in the mental health system. Well, you know, we might have started that a different way. Instead of, you know, investigative reporters, you know, going and finding sources over a long period of time, we might have been able even to, like, throw that question out on the website and ask people to give us some leads.
Leah, this is fascinating because I happen to have shot a ton of material for the Kaiser Family Foundation on a shoot with, you know, for the Kaiser Family Foundation, a corporate thing, 2 years ago at Georgia Regional Hospital. We shot some of the most horrendous footage I've ever shot in my career. And I called Alan Judd, the investigator on that piece. I said, Alan, because he said he couldn't get access to certain places at Georgia Regional. And I said, Alan, call up so-and-so at Kaiser Foundation. We got a whole box of tapes. Maybe you guys can do a multimedia thing, you know, because you said you couldn't get access to Georgia Regional. Well, we had full access for an entire day. Let's not let this video go to waste. So there's, you know, I don't know what the follow-up, you know, I had to go on and go to soccer practice or something, but I don't know what the follow-up was with that was, but I certainly hope that the Kaiser Foundation was able to share their video with Alan at some point down the road in this process.
And there are also other...
I don't want to be like, I don't like new media. That's not my point. I just worry that we all worry way too much about new media. Instead of just sort of adjusting and looking at it as a new vehicle, an additional vehicle, I think WSB is excellent. I think your page is really great. I look at it every day. You know, I think we just need to adjust. We're afraid we're losing our audience in the traditional way, so we're trying to give it, you know, but the one thing as media outlets that we have that the bloggers don't have is trust. People trust the product. They know CNN is a product. They know their brand.
What blogs are you reading?
They are correct.
I read four blogs right here every single day. I read those before I go to AJC.com or WSB.
Yeah,
I trust everything that comes out of these four people's mouths here, or typewriters, I should say.
Right.
I believe them. They're good bloggers. They've been blogging for 5 years. They have built up an audience of thousands. And
no, I that's fine. That is
so,
okay.
I don't buy into that.
I want to throw this out. If you know, you talked about that people read the AJC and watch WSB and CNN because they trust them. But then if the print product goes away, you know, are they going to lose that trust? Is that trust going to continue? And then my other thing I'd like to just throw out as a devil's advocate thing, if we can tell exactly like what people are hitting on and our advertisers are saying, we want the stories up there, our ads on the stories that are getting the most hits, is that going to eventually skew the coverage of
news? It already has, probably.
You don't think in the print product it skewed to some extent that, you know, we've all had big sports sections? You know? I mean, that's not new, but there is, you know, the trust issue.
Go ahead, Molly. Back in the mid-80s, when I was a journalist, I covered a seminar or a speech by David Brinkley, and someone like people always do, they complain about the sensationalism of the media and why don't they ever report on the good things instead of all the negative things. It was your typical media complaint. And David Brinkley said something that I'd never really thought about regarding free press. Usually you think of free press as we have the right to report on what we want to report on, and that's usually the argument is that we're the editors, we're the journalists, we're the ones with the credentials, etc. But his take on it was, a free press means that you have the ability to go out and start your own newspaper. And I thought, wow, you know, I just had never heard of it that way, because one, barriers to entry mean it's a heck of a lot of money to do so, but this is where we are 20 years later, and that's exactly what we're doing. We're going out there and creating our own media, and the definition of a journalist does change when you've got someone, you know, I'm a huge Salon.com fan. And there's never been a television outlet of Salon.com. It never was in print. It wasn't a magazine that I know of. I only know it as an online source, and it always gets tagged for, you know, some award or notoriety of some sort. But one of the most popular contributors now is this former attorney,
Glenn Greenwald. You know, and you think, where the hell did he come from? He is all over the place. And it's his own writing style. It's his... He just has words flowing out of his fingers. I don't know where the guy finds the time to write so well and so much.
You know,
but he's there constantly. He's a former attorney.
You know, if any news organization that is not listening to the bloggers is not reading blogs, then they might as well stop answering the telephones. I mean, every newsroom I've ever worked in, at some point during the day, somebody yells, "Pick up the phone!" Right? That's part of the communication. Well, you know what? We've moved way beyond pick up the phones to read the blogs. Somebody read the blogs today. I mean, because the bloggers are, they are, what are the former audience? There are neighbors. They're the canary in the coal mine when it comes to the story. I mean, if you're not reading the blogs, then you're not going to know what's going on into the neighborhoods. And all we are talking about, and I know it's what you guys are talking about these days, is hyper-local. Get local, local, local. I mean, I could care less these days about stories in Pocatello, Idaho. It is not going to resonate because people who want that story are going to go to the Pocatello, Idaho Daily News.
Yeah, their blogs.
I have got to get so local, it's crazy. And the blogs are one of the ways. I mean, I'm sorry, guys, but we're using you. I mean, we are.
We want to see some more. We would love to pop up on WSB TV, actually, not just the .com. there are a lot of content providers out there, whether we're producing video or editorial.
User generated content is free.
Do I have a treat for you? it's called Planet Atlanta. And I love your comment on what David Brinkley said, anybody can start a newspaper. I tried that about 13 years ago when the Journal Constitution, every time they wrote about an ethnic group, it seemed like they said, those wild and crazy East Europeans or Asians love to gamble. And it's like, I am so sick of the way the AJC is demeaning ethnic groups. I think I'll start my own newspaper. So I started one called Planet Atlanta. And the AJC kind of picked up on it and later did the Atlanta and the World and asked us if we could give them advice on how to better cover the ethnic groups in Atlanta. And I almost said, well, can you give us advice on how to sell ads? The prohibitive thing about starting a newspaper back then, the first prohibitive thing was the $3,000 a month printing bill for doing 10,000 copies.
Yeah.
And compared to that, a blog is so... PlanetAtlanta.com, yes, it is there now. And it's about to launch. What is it? It's $100 a month, and you got your own newspaper. And it can be local. It's incredible. And I think I've got a journalism background with the Henry W. Grady School of Journalism. I've worked in it 25 years. Yes, I'm going to be responsible. No, I'm not going to slander anybody. No, I'm not going to lie.
Will Lindsay Lohan lead your first entry?
No, I don't think so. But
the other thing that, nobody will ever go there.
I think we need to be really careful about now that we did need to be careful about 20 years ago is how the web is being used for paid propaganda posing as news reports. And there is a law that says that as long as it originates overseas, even if this propaganda is aimed for the Atlanta market, the domestic market, it's fine to spend $100 million of federal funds to promote the war on terror or our plans in Iraq, or even as long as
That's why building up a relationship and a credibility factor with your local bloggers is so important, because they're going to call BS when stuff like that happens. They'll be the first people to call BS.
It's very hard to call BS on something that you don't see.
But they'll see it, believe you me. They're going to see a lot of stuff. The bloggers are your eyes and ears. I want to bring in the PR people. I know we have some PR people here, right? Yeah, let's bring you guys into the fold. I'm really interested to hear...
I'm saying a lot, but I'm curious, are bloggers making any money? I mean, how
Yeah, tell us. I want to know more about. You said the bloggers are eyes and ears. I don't know how they do that. How are you our eyes and ears? I mean, I'm sorry.
I mean, are you out reporting?
Walk around the neighborhood and find out.
What's your MyRoomReport.com. So I have a small. I have two cameras. High quality XL1 camera, 3 chip is not really the beta 3 camera, and then I have a small little handy cam that I use with a microphone, and then sometimes I'm going through these neighborhoods, interview my friends, talk about social issues, and I'll put a little video together and put it on my blog.
But it's all about Atlanta.
No, mine are more just general urban issues, and it just depends upon, sometimes I'll be in a different city, and I'll go talk to some people in the city about what's going on in their community. So I'm not necessarily that hyper-local.
I was down at the Gold Dome during the session, several times, ran into plenty of bloggers down there blogging about the legislature.
Isn't it great, though, that I mean, somebody could just have a camera like that, whereas a few years ago it was a camera crew with a big TK-76 and a deck and,
Is it a hobby or do they make money?
It's a passion. It's a passion for me.
It's a passion.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a journalist.
And so I think the money will come. We're not too worried right now, but it'll come.
If you talk about the analogy between bloggers to the media, think about the analogy if any of you have health issues that you want to find out information about. I started looking online for information about hyperthyroidism. In finding people in a community like the Yahoo groups that are online, and you start talking to them about certain health issues, and you talk to your community, and you get just information from all over the country or the world or wherever, you finally end up with more information than your doctor knows. Yeah. Right. And so, if any of you had that experience, you have to think then. A bunch of people talking about things they know or where they've been and things they've heard and things they've talked to, and they have a guy from Iraq who used to live there and he's now, came over here 10 years ago, is now landscaping. He might know a little bit more about living in Iraq than the reporter in the newsroom, downtown. And so when you talk to people and you actually find out people whose lives have been affected by these things, you learn a lot. And when I totally, my dermatologist, I don't care if I ever see him again. He knows nothing. And I'm dead serious about that. It's acne.
The social networks.
Adult acne is another subject. They know nothing about it. And now I've done stuff that I have strictly found online, but the doctors want to tell you, oh, you don't want to get your information online because it's dangerous. We know all this stuff. I'm sorry. But the analogy is there. And I have to say, until journalism is so intellectually curious that the credibility rises above all the things that you see on some of the media that are failing, in my mind, to maintain some credibility because they want to cut budgets, they will place advertising over news content. They cut. I've been in a newsroom, and I remember thinking, how the hell are we going to cover this stuff if we don't have people? And how can I get the story if you're wanting it now instead of tomorrow, when I could get in touch with someone who knows more about the topic? That's the reality. So blogging, to me, is gaining a lot of credibility in my mind. And I guess it's because I do feel like I can censor the information. If somebody tells me that I can take, reflexology in my toe to clear up my acne, then I'm going to discredit it. But if most of the people tell me stuff that I've heard before and I start doing it, makes sense, that's the credibility. And PR does work that way in the sense of corporate community too. I'll go make that transition to PR. I know a lot of PR folks that have credibility I trust more than some of the media I used to.
That's an interesting point. I haven't heard that one yet. But Alan, jump in here, please.
I'd like to go back to the question that you were asking about how do you make money? And quite honestly, I understand passion, but passion, mama doesn't like passion. That doesn't feed mama's belly.
Right.
How can you make money? I'm an investor. How can I make money, and what do I look for in investments? Because that's the only thing I care about. I understand the journal, and by the way, I'm allergic to tar and feathers, about a year But what I'm interested in is learning about how you make money. The AJC had a great article this morning on the bottom of the paper, you know, where they were talking about the different technologies and how it's enhancing the way that they do their journalism. I thought it was pretty good article. But how do you make and the passion bit doesn't make the list.
I think hooking up the passion with
how you make the money.
Well, hook up the passion with the right advertising.
Well, I know bloggers who are making money, but they make it off the ads. But you have to build up your viewership. I mean, I've been blogging for less than a year, probably since November. I've been posting my videos, so I'm getting my, you know, building my base of visitors. But I do know people who make money off of ads. It's not enough to maybe pay the mortgage, but they are beginning to monetize it. That's the million-dollar question: how do you monetize user-generated content? How do you monetize a blog? You know, there are people who get paid to blog.
But
the advertisers find you, or do you find the
advertisers? I haven't looked for any advertisers yet. There's some
sites that are trying to mash up bloggers with their appropriate advertisers. You have to reach a certain level of viewership. Like, you have to have 30,000 uniques a day. I mean, excuse me, a month for your blog to pique the interest of these people, set you up with the advertisers they feel are right for your blog. But people are starting to get into that business of mashing up, making sure that advertisers want to find the blogs. They want to find the passionate bloggers. If I was a political campaign, I'd want to advertise on James's blog. If I was selling a rap record, I'd want to advertise on Armani's blog. If I was selling sex toys, I'd want to advertise on Amber's blog. So,
Amber, tell us about your blog.
Certainly passion can find its market. I'm firmly convinced that will follow. Alan, you need to help us out, dear.
So from the PR standpoint, since you wanted that point,
right.
We actually comment kind of on a variety of standpoints. I'm from the old media. Former television news reporter turned, the other side in PR, and did it about a year ago, and have been absolutely astounded. Working with Cincha, who's our new media person, and we have a new media person in a PR firm. And what's been like really cool to find out is from the advertising standpoint, some of our clients redirect to more specific websites on the subjects. Their donors or spend the money in those arenas, the townhalls.com, if it's someone who, is more on the political side, or, the faith-based initiatives, the religious websites that have the higher content and blogs. Yeah, we say, you can advertise here, and it's a lot cheaper than more than the AJC or the New York Times. And then there's a standpoint, too, that when you've got events going on that you want people to come to, what's been really interesting with the credentialing standpoint with events is you've got what we call legitimate media who would be, old media, television news.
I want to make sure the bloggers heard that legitimate media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's become kind of a controversy because you've got the television news organization,
well,
the ABC, the NBC, the Fox News from the local area. And then you've got a kid who's a blogger who's got his little teeny camera standing on the platform, like shaking it. And you're like, he's got credentials. which is an interesting thing. And then also how we give package, what we decide to send out to different types of media. We're becoming very, very interested in websites and blogs versus maybe mainstream media. That if a client has a story that maybe work for the AJC, maybe it'll work for another website.
There you go. That's a great way of furthering the topic.
I worked for CNN when CNN wasn't even part of the pool at the White House. So, you ask a question about a 12-year-old standing there.
Yeah.
CNN wasn't even part of the pool.
Do you ask him to get off, or do you think that he's going to be the next?
I think you better be really careful about asking him to get off because CNN wasn't even part of the pool. They weren't even invited to ride, on the press plane. They had no space at the White House. They just showed up every single day. I mean, and the networks wanted them to go away.
The D.C. federal court allotted a slot specifically to a blogger at the
Peter Libby
trial. Yeah. Republican National Convention in 2004, credentialed bloggers.
Yeah.
I'd
get that 12-year-old's card. I would, you know. I mean, because.
I think this was kind of a really interesting place to be. Looking at, well,
yeah.
You know what?
I think if you've got an open mind in here,
I'd like his card. We could set up something at SB.com.
One of the
people
here
has
been having it up for a while, right here. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm from a PR and marketing perspective as well, and I think time, what you said, and everything together, it's like, you know, it used to be mass media, and everybody wanted to reach a mass audience, and now it's completely reversed. And everybody wants to reach a targeted audience, which is what, if you're good at PR marketing, that's what you're doing. And that's why the blogs are so important, and that's why new media is important, because you can dumb down your message to exactly who you need to reach and why you need to reach them.
Did
and mass audiences just don't work anymore.
She gets it. Give her a gold star.
Target would have been.
Yeah, right here. Question. I know I'm just starting in PR. I just graduated from college, so.
But how's that debt?
God, that's what you guys have to worry about. Yeah, we didn't.
All we learned about is targeting your message, finding the right audience. So in 5 years from now, do we completely lose perspective in the broad spectrum? Is everybody only going to the place to hear the point of view that they want? Then you have satellite radio, you have your blogs.
Talk to CNN. Talk to they do you ever, about that one.
I mean, how does that impact us as a society that you can now only, you know, be as a community with the people that share the viewpoint and access that viewpoint?
It is happening.
It is absolutely happening.
People aren't watching Fox or CNN. They don't want,
right, that's my
unless
point.
You're in the news media, you have to monitor.
That's my point, and you don't have to listen to the radio anymore. You can listen to the BBC, or you can listen to Fox, or you can listen to
Right,
or you can listen to music and have no news at all. So then, do we become a society that is only the Foxes or the CNNs, or is only the politicals versus the stylistic?
It's what rings truest and most authentic that's going to survive.
So do we just lose the sense of an aware country and aware society?
Just because you're choosing what you want to consume doesn't mean you're not aware and continue being polarized.
Yeah, I have a kind of partly an observation. I work at CNN, so I can dish it a little bit. But, today, I was writing about the G8, and Pierre Selton got out of jail.
You're a good story every time.
Damn.
Keep her in jail.
I have no idea.
I don't know. Good question.
I personally have my own personal opinion about her, but you know,
it's really hard to tell.
I really have a problem with this local focus. Every time a blonde girl is kidnapped somewhere, you know, we make a big deal of it. I don't know. I don't know what that contributes, and I am obviously from a. I'm old. I started in the wire services and I'm from a traditional background. But I just don't get it. Maybe it's just me.
No, it's me too. Don't worry about it.
I don't think anybody gets the Paris Hilton jail thing. I mean, does anybody jump in here? And...
Wait a minute.
It's the mass appeal. It's the mass appeal. They're going for the broadest, the lowest common denominator.
Who was the famous Deb in the 40s that the whole country was entranced by because at her Deb party they swung from the chandeliers? I mean, you know, this is to some extent human nature.
But if you look at how many
and the world didn't end since the 40s, although maybe, I don't know.
There's a 30% reduction in the consumption of printed newspaper products, a 30% reduction in the consumption of radio. There's a 33%.
30%?
Yes. A 30.
Yes, but what is the growth rate on those print products websites?
There's only one growth medium, and that's the internet, and it allows you through the social media to segment your audience and to be as niche as you possibly want to be, to offer specifically what people are seeking and to advertise against it. And you know, that is what's driving fundamentally the increase in the popularity of the medium. You can select. You can self-select what's of interest to you.
But and as a medium, do you still put out all news? Do you just put them out to all outlets? Or do you, as the media, do you just become completely fractioned? And there's like one entity for style and one entity for entertainment and one for politics. Or do you still have, you know, CNN that does all of them, but they just spit their messages to different audiences?
Well, it's not spit their messages. I mean, people make their choices. I mean, there's almost, you know, I almost get the feeling there's something sort of a feeling that new media, you know, there's an anti-democratic attitude about new media. I mean, people get to make choices.
Well, I think,
and they may choose.
Better.
They may choose to be interested in Home and Garden, and they may want to see about the war in Iraq.
And nothing.
This has been up for a long time.
Segue anti-democratic Republican.
It was little D I meant.
Can be successful using online media and blogging and everything else for his campaign if he doesn't.
Say that again.
Fred Thompson, who's the Republican who wants to says he's going to run, and if he does run, he's going to use it all online.
Well, all the campaigns, I mean, are heavily online at the moment, using social networking,
and in Second Life,
not advertising anything like that. He used that exclusive, right? You know, now I got
Is Fred Thompson going to be using online approach solely for his campaign? Oh, nobody's going solely one way or the other right now.
But they're all heavily using the internet as a component of their campaign. They're using social networking. They've got MySpace. You know, I mean, they're all doing that. I mean, they were doing that to some extent in 2004, and actually to a great extent. I think we missed it a lot.
It's really, this is such a fascinating discussion. We could be here from 10, 11, 12, but the parking garage is closing down by 9. It's already 8:15, so I just want to give a warning. Let's have about 10 more minutes of open free-form.
Can they talk about their blogs for 1 minute each?
Yeah, sure. Start with James.
Drifting Through the Grift. I do George politics.
What is it?
Drifting Through the Grift.
Galloway has a blog on AJC.com. It's very popular.
Political insider, but he knows as much. Next guy, Amani.
Yeah, so my blog is called myurbanreport.com.
Myurbanreport.com.
And basically, I'll give you a little background. My background is in broadcast journalism. I worked at a Fox station for about 8 years in Tampa. And I moved here to work on a citizen journalism show for a network that is kind of going through a transition right now. And I'm also a graduate student, so I'm kind of studying like new media, convergence media. And so as I was sort of researching citizen journalism, because I didn't really know a lot about it when I worked, you know, for Fox, but I was very interested in, you know, the idea. Of course, blogs are a lot of times the grassroots media. So I started my Urban Report in August of last year, but I didn't really start blogging until like I didn't get it, you know. And you get the link, and you have to post every day, and link some more, and link to other blogs. And so I'm blogging about urban issues, national issues, media issues, that sort of thing. And then I'm posting my own adventures through life and travels, as well as interviewing different figures that I run across. And so,
guys, you know, I just gotta say a word about Amani stuff because it's so amazing. You know, I want to be in a rap video now. You know, you watch these videos and these things. I have nothing in common with this audience with this stuff, and it's like, wow, that was just great shit. I want to be one of those. He just went out with his camera, interviewed a crew, you know, from Hollywood, just flew in from LA to shoot a rap video. It was so cool. Anyway.
Yeah, so that's my blog. Behind that is a friend of mine from California was actually on the crew, so he invited me out, you know, to the video shoot. It was here in Atlanta. So I grabbed my camera and I had all access, so I interviewed the artists and some of the production people. Put together a little three, you know, my videos are around 2 minutes because I feel like people's attention spans are very short. Yeah. And in news, I mean, our stories are a minute 30. So, you know, short little palatable video segments on my life and about other things going on in the, you know, urban community is kind of my niche. So that's what I'm sort of doing.
Rusty Tan, longtime blogger, extremely popular blog. This blog is ranked very, very high on TechNorai. He's been blogging for years. He and Amber next door to him, Amber Ray,
these people, they co-founded the Georgia Podcast Network, and that's georgiapodcastnetwork.com, where there's a huge selection of podcasts that also, if you need podcasting production, they're the people to talk to. But you're both coders, too. So anyway, talk about your blog.
Well, I when I graduated from college, I worked for actually a mainstream newspaper for about a year, worked with Hutter, actually. And, you know, got out of that, decided I wanted to go down a different career path. I developed some websites in college, so I got into web development. But I never really lost the itch to sort of pay attention to politics and to keep up with it, but I had no desire to do it professionally anymore. So I just kept writing about it, even though I was going down a different career path. And, you know, here I am.
Name of your blog, Rusty?
RadicalGeorgiaModerate.com.
RadicalGeorgiaModerate.com. It's not for the faint of heart.
That'll work.
Oh, dart
her. Because the Atlas Banner hero misquoted.
Yeah. And Amber, your next?
My name is Amber Ray. My blog is beingamberray.com. I've been blogging for over 5 years. I co-founded the Georgia Podcast Network with Rusty. The podcast that we do together on that site is called Mostly ITP. It focuses on people and issues inside Atlanta. We cover a lot of things that the big media doesn't cover because it's very hyper-local, it's very specifically focused. We feel that the power of new media is to connect with your local community in a new way, learn about your neighbors, and learn about the community that you're a part of, and take the online connections that you make and take that to the offline world.
Great. So I guess we're
going to
wrap up.
Do
you
have
any final comments?
Yeah,
I was told not to sell anything while I was here.
I'm still a fan of newspapers, magazines, local TV news. How will some of those old media survive indefinitely in today's world with the new media?
I've talked to these guys.
They'll be platform agnostic.
Talk about that a minute. That's a great term.
Platform agnostic. Leah, you go ahead and
Thanks. No, I don't know if it's the AJC, but it's sort of a the concept is it's a news organization. So you're delivering information both on print and online. I don't, you know, the scales may be this way at this point. It may, you know, more people may move to online. Some resources will move there, but you've still got to generate the content, so there's still important reporting to be done, and, you know.
And I'll make a prediction about the business end. I think a lot of the revenue growth, all of the revenue growth is going to be on the internet side. And I think eventually a huge percentage of the revenue will come from the internet properties.
But the question, the issue and then the quandary at the moment is, you know, does the revenue, as people move, will as much revenue move? In other words, will it generate as much?
At Cox, we call it multi-platform delivery. And one thing we didn't even talk about tonight is mobile. And that is, I mean, that this has become a huge thing for us because, think about it, breaking news, you get it here first. And then I drive you, that drives...
And transparency.
That drives you to the website, which then drives you to our newscast, which then drives you back to the website. So it's, we call it multi-platform delivery.
And but for some issues of law, I would throw out whether or not in 5 years, does Cox have both a WSB website and an AJC.com website?
You know, websites are infinite. I can go out and start one tomorrow. Start some more.
But that's what I mean. I mean, right now we take WSB video as well as AP video. So, but, you know, in that sense, you know, you're seeing video like you see on television. He's got stories, text stories like you would see on a newspaper. So, you know, I don't know the answer, but I mean, I think they're interesting questions.
I think we should have one of these programs about blogging, how you do it, how you start it, how you
try
to make money in it. You know, go to
so we kind of wrote manuals basically every night. It's so much fun. We'll probably be here up because if anyone wants to join us over at Manuals, it's sort of our de facto office. We blog independently all day long, then we kind of meet up at Manuals and discuss the days.
So great. Let's just adjourn to manuals if anyone wants to head over there. We can continue the discussion.
The song you heard in this podcast was Flux by Drop Trio, available only on Magnatune.com.
Thanks for listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network. Visit us at gapodcastnetwork.com. If you have a question, comment, or drunken rant, leave us a voicemail by calling 678-389-9441. Who knows, it might be featured in a podcast. You can also email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com.